Good morning and welcome to Making a Change for Good. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
So assigning from yesterday, self-hate holds in place the suffering over an issue by making it you wrong. What self-hating voices do you hear around the issue? Write down the self-hating messages. Example, you're no fun. You don't know how to have fun. Note, self-hate often speaks in you voices addressing us as you. Never record self-hate messages. All right, here's our first caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hello. Hi, it's Anna from Yorkshire in England.
Well, hello.
Hello. Hello, hi.
What are you seeing?
Yes, I'm seeing a billion, trillion things, loads of things. It's really, really good. What I chose to look at, just because when the assignment first came up, it was just kind of there in front of me. It was something that I was doing anyway. And I found I probably wouldn't have picked it if I was thinking that way, but I found it really interesting. So it's socially interacting with people, but when it's playful, so it's not, you know, using labels. It's not work, or it's not, you know, it's just things like, you know, saying hello to the neighbours. But also, I've been looking at it using technology as well, so emails and texts, and then social media groups. Things like that, which are meant to be fun. So all of this stuff is all meant to be fun, and it's been really, really interesting. So I've seen how I get monitored, really cripplingly monitored, as to what I can and can't say. So it's been really interesting. And so for this activity, self-hate, what the voices say. So what I'm seeing is. I've told awful stuff. Like one of them I've got in front of me is, you are substandard and you can never be fixed. And whatever you say or do, you're wrong because you're always wrong, and things like that.
Whoa.
And what I
nothing
know,
subtle, huh?
nothing subtle. And one that comes up a lot, and that I've seen before, karmically, you're stupid. And so what I've been able to do is see that's just when I'm really caught up. But if I'm able to stand back and say, look at the facts, none of it is true, because I'm quite sure that I'm not stupid. I know that I'm intelligent, and other things. So I think for me, it's been that's where the work is. It's that.
Well,
just hang on a minute. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's just enormous, isn't it? Because what we're meant to do, of course, is hear those messages, get identified with somebody who believes them, and feel bad.
Mm.
That's how it's supposed to work. But doing practice, as you have, you recognize them, and you know that they're not true. So you don't get identified with ego and feel bad. You disidentify. You hear that message, you step back and go, whoa, wait a minute, that's a lie. That's not true.
Yeah.
So it's wonderful, right, when we use what ego has used against us for us.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
The very messages that were meant to put us to sleep and make us feel bad now wake us up.
Mm. Yes. Absolutely. And I've got lots of recordings that just, well, the same recording that just says that over and over again. So I'm hoping, so with the aim being that when I am in that situation, and that recording will just come into my head at just the right moment.
Yes. Yes, it will.
It will.
Because that negativity is brainwashing. And what we do in this practice is de-brainwash ourselves. We're not brainwashing ourselves to a positive. It's not that. We are simply recognizing what's not true, disidentifying, and turning our attention to what is true.
Yeah, that's what I've been seeing. Yeah, it's true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just one last thing. Sorry, you go, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm just excited. Go ahead.
It was just a really helpful thing that I found helpful for me anyway, just with this, was that because of the top, why I've been able to see so much is the topic that I chose, sort of playful social interactions, included looking at written social interactions, so via text, and that just gave me a chance to slow down and really, so I'd have my finger on the, honestly, I'd have my finger on these, on the buttons or on the letters typing,
mm-hmm.
and because I was aware of the assignment, I could hear it, I could hear self-hate and voices and ego, whereas that is a bit more tricky face-to-face. But that then helped me with the face-to-face. So it's a little bit like how, you know, when we do sitting meditation and then walking meditation and then working. So I just wanted to say that I found that. So I think I chose a really good topic for me. So, thank you.
That's part of it, isn't it? You chose a really good topic for you because when it dropped in to do that, you did it. And that's how the intelligence is able to guide us.
Yeah, I didn't look around for a better idea. I just went with it.
That's right.
Oh.
I love it. Thank you, Anna.
Well, thank you. Thank you to everybody. It's all wonderful. And everybody, I've loved all the radio shows. They're so wonderful. Thank you to everyone. All right, Gassho, go happy.
Gassho, go happy.
Thanks, Anna. It really is the power of recording what is true when what the voices say lie, right? Just that rhythm of here's what the voice of self-hate says when it lies and what I know to be true is. Because it is a way to redirect our attention from ignorance to awareness.
Yes. Well, and what Anna was just pointing out is that doing that exercise where there's a distance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's doing a text or an email or social media, where there's a distance and bringing conscious awareness to that distance, right? Then in that slowing down, and it requires a real commitment to bring conscious awareness to it because, again, we're supposed to just get swept up in whatever is going on, lose conscious awareness, and act out of ego, right? But having that distance is really, really helpful.
Yeah, the image that drops in for me, Sherry, is a fire, you know, the firecracker or when you set an explosive, that there's that gap. It has to jump in order to complete the circuit. And if you can just increase the gap so that it doesn't jump, then the explosive doesn't go off. And that's really what we're doing, right? Being able to bring that level of attention and presence to the moment so that the reactivity of conditioned mind doesn't just keep going.
Yes. And to stay with your image, if we are going to set an explosive, we want a long enough fuse that we can get out of range, right?
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Here's our next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Jeff from Ohio.
Hello, Jeff. What are you seeing?
Well, what I'm seeing is I have this issue with my feet. So I started off the month sort of thinking, well, I'll look for play that doesn't involve my feet. And, you know, that was a bit of a challenge. And anyway, it turns out my feet flared up a couple weeks ago. So I'm right back here. And so what I was seeing, I was looking at the voices, and the first voice that comes up is, well, you can fix this. you know, and actually I've been going to some doctors, you know, we go to the doctors, we can fix this, and then you'll be just like new, quote unquote, and, you know, you'll be able to do everything. And then as the doctors sort of don't have any solutions, you know, there's the other part where just, you know, give up. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to help.
And so it's been, you know, the process of picking the third option, which is some acceptance, which is that, you know, I'm going to do what I can do, you know, and see what happens. You know, I don't know what my...
And Jeff, yeah. to just carry on with what Anna was talking about, for me, the middle way is being open to every bit of intel that comes your way.
Yeah.
Right? So the doctors don't have the solution. Ego certainly doesn't have the solution. So what else might be available? Again, for me, when I open to that and somebody says, well, you know, my cousin had something like that, and what he did was, well, I'm going to do that. Okay? And then I read an article and it says something about something, and I think, I'm going to research that. And whatever it is, I'm going to try it. Because the help is there for us. But if we stay in those two options of something outside of me is going to fix me, or nothing is going to fix me and I'm going to be like this forever, then ego wins in both cases.
Yes, and I think that was, like I said, I think what I saw was the barrier to being open was the voice that was saying, well, if there's no guarantee, you know, if this does, you know, then just don't try it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the assumption that what we really desire is to be like new and unconscious.
That's
the carrot that ego is always holding out to us, right? Yeah, you can be you can be the way you were before and unconscious.
Right. Well, and the other part is that this is again, as best I can tell, this is only about pain. You know, the fact is I can walk, but there's pain, and the worst of the pain was in the morning. You know, I sleep all night, and my feet are fine, but my ankles are just screaming, you know, don't get out of bed.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the pain is coming, you know, and so that was part of it is, I mean, there's a moment where it's like, okay, this is pain. I've got to get up, you know, and start doing something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the oppression of the pain, I guess, is what, you know, to come at that spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And say, you know, let this pain oppress me.
It reminds me of one of my favorite stories, which I've probably told you. But he was an old guy, and he loved to play tennis. He played tennis all of his life, and then finally the doctor said he had arthritis in his whatever, his feet, his ankles, his whatever. And so he would just have to quit playing tennis. And so he quit playing tennis. And after a few months, it dawned on him that he was in as much pain not playing tennis as he was playing tennis, but he loves playing tennis. So he just went back to playing tennis.
Yeah, yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. No, that's, yeah, because, you know, of course, when, you know, I mean, that's the other part is when I get oppressed by the pain, you know, my whole life just, you know, goes into
collapse.
You know, just spirals down. Yeah.
It just takes all the joy out of everything.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's been good to look at that. And fortunately for me, the pain is, you know, it goes away after a while. I mean, if I stop walking, it goes away. And so there's another part I think about awareness about how much I walk, how much I don't walk. You know, do I decide, like I said, to walk through the pain or, you know, what's going to happen to me?
Yeah.
And so now
it's a big experiment, isn't it? A big exploration.
Right.
So and for me, it's okay, so what else is possible? All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what else is possible? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So,
all right. Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
Take care of yourself.
Yeah, thanks, I Jeff. Will.
Okay.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, I so know that process, Sherry.
I know you do.
And what I love about it, I think that for me, the spiritual significance of it is that place of trading being fixed to being unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
The lesson in my life unfolding and being present to it moment by moment through something that requires vigilance in that way is just such an extraordinary gift.
Yes. Yes. And we can sound masochistic in that, because a lot of people would say, so you're saying that pain is a gift and that you're grateful to be living in pain, because, and yeah, we can say, yeah, that's true. Because what I'm not allowed to do is go unconscious and ignore my life. Mm-hmm. So the ideal, of course, would be in conscious awareness and pain-free.
That's right.
But if the choice is between pain and consciousness, however that choice would be laid out, I'm going to take whatever supports conscious awareness.
Yes, and you know, the there's a way in which it puts me in touch with the fantasies of authority and how conditioned I am to assume A, that the authority has the answer, B, that the authority knows anything.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, my sense of well-being is based on someone else telling me how it's going to work. Yes, it's helpful, but there's a way in which if we're learning to pay attention to the intelligence that animates as a source of information, building that trust with the intelligence that animates in my form is the gift in that situation, right? I don't go unconscious. There's no fix. As far as I know, there is no fix. And there's a way in which the fix evolves within quotes in how I'm managing that and how I work with it in my body and what I discover. And it's a giant treasure hunt for the next clue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Because, of course, a lot of people would choose the fix of pain medication. You know, the stuff exists that can make it so you don't feel any of that. And the idea that then as soon as I'm out of the pain, then I'll deal with, and of course we won't.
No. No. And the element of play that Jeff was talking about is so important in that area, because it's the one place where it feels so serious that attitude isn't available. But the play that we can look at is that the play of discovery, right? The play of finding out the next piece of information that's going to assist me in this process of working with what is, not what shouldn't be, right? Because that's the other thing. I've got this condition and, you know,
you shouldn't.
It's not going to go away.
If you were the right person, you wouldn't.
That's right. Or there's something that will fix it forever. And once you accept that that's not the case, there's a different relationship you bring to it.
Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it the treasure hunt.
Yeah,
right? Well, what about this? Well, what well, what about, what would happen with that?
Yeah.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah. 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 All right, here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Okay, this is Lori calling from Asheville.
Hey, Lori.
Hi. This is so amazing, these conversations day after day. The one that was just what you all were just talking about, what I'm going through is grief, and so it's that kind of pain that is just, you know, working with, I'm really, my practice is to approach, not avoid, to experience without getting identified, you know, with the experience. And how there's been such challenging moments and days with this. I did wake up this morning with I woke up into a conversation with a mentor that was so amazing for me, that was just offering the invitation to stay in relationship with the wisdom and compassion that is here always. And then there's also just sometimes getting flooded with emotion. And so, yeah, with what was talked about yesterday and what's being talked about today, I guess I'm just wanting some support or some guidance about how to be able to do this with grief, you know, and to have a spirit of inquiry, have the willingness to even, you know, how to play with it in the sense of just being with. That's what I'm really asking for. Yeah.
And for me, Lori, the image that came to me as you were describing that is one of dying. And so
one of dying.
Yeah, uh-huh. Dying. And so there you are with her, and she's dying, if you can imagine that. And so how are you with her with that? Because she's going to go through a range of emotion that is just going to be breathtaking, right? In this process, she's going to feel everything that a human being can feel. And she's if the relationship is welcoming that you have with her, then she'll be able to express everything that she feels in this circumstance. And
mm-hmm.
in that full range of emotion, there will be laughter, joking, fun, play, as well as great sadness and tears and anger and bitterness and every kind of thing a person could experience.
Yeah, absolutely, everything. And it's sometimes just moment to moment. It's so amazing. You know, in the midst of like some intense sorrow, then there can be laughter. I do absolutely think that the willingness to be present. Just a few minutes ago, there were these thoughts about, oh, I can't believe this or that happened, right? Or that I did this or that. And that was immediately I thought, oh, that's what gets rejected and the blame and all that stuff. And what you're saying is exactly what the practice is, which is to just embrace that and go, yeah, that did happen.
Yeah. That's part of it too. Yep.
That's you know, what happened. As part of being human, it's saying everything, you know, that what I'm experiencing, I don't think is unique to this being. It's like other people probably have experienced some of this and said or done things that later you go, oh, I can't believe I said or did that. And that's where I imagine just the circle of compassion that would you say, tell me more, you know, and doing the two-handed recording of, well, tell me more about that. Yeah, you know, and I hear that. And, you know, I love you.
That's exactly right. Yes,
right.
Yes. Right. That's all we can offer. And that's true with Jeff and his feet, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I love you.
Yeah.
I love you. I'm here. Whatever goes on with you, I'm here. It's okay. You can talk to me. You can tell me about it.
I know. That
I love
was, maybe
you.
That was last night on the radio show. It was just record it all, put it all out there, and the blessing of it is not so much the recording of it all. It's just, you know, what we practice with listening to it with the greatest amount of love and compassion that a person can practice with. You know, that would just say, oh, of course that did happen. And that there is so much of that, just embracing that with kindness. And sometimes that's what's not happening. You know, it going into the blame or the shame or the anger, going out or going in, and then just, yeah.
Identifying with ego instead of the human being who's having the experience.
Exactly.
Right? And you get to see that there's a vast difference between the human being who is actually living life and having these experiences and that voice that comes in that has nothing to do with this experience, but wants to superimpose itself or wants to insert itself.
Oh my God! And claim it, and then put it on me and identity. And which, you know, I love hearing that, Sherry, because then when I woke up this morning in that conversation with a mentor, it was like, wow, this is what's actually available. This is what is possible instead of the other, and then more and more just recognizing, okay, there's conditioning that has nothing to do with me. I mean, it's just so impersonal. Yeah. It's just so
impersonal. Yep.
Yeah. It's so awful and mean and contrived. But just to remember that going through an experience that has all the qualities of everything, what you were just describing, laughter and tears and disbelief and gratitude and connection and just having all that as part of what's happening here and not excluding it. That's what I really need to keep.
That's your opportunity, right?
Absolutely.
Your opportunity.
Mm-hmm. That's the opportunity here. That is even the opportunity, I think, for play, because it's the opportunity of presence that said, be here with me.
Enjoying life, all of life.
Yeah.
Being fully alive to all of life, not just what ego says is the good stuff or the way it should be or the fun part or the
what I want. Mm-hmm. What I want, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, because it's just so helpful to say this and be heard and be witnessed by however many people are on the call, because I just feel such gratitude that you know, that people call in and that we're in this together.
Lori, with that, such great compassion. You know, we go out then into the world and we're interacting with a bunch of human beings who do not have this probably anywhere in their lives.
Anywhere, yeah. Right. I know. Mm-hmm. It's just unbelievable that we do. And so my deep gut show to you both and to everyone, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lori.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Lori. Now, Sherry, what was dropping in for me is how manipulated we are by the conditioning that says everything that could be playful needs to be serious, and everything that actually is painful needs to be play.
Right. You should be doing something different with this. You shouldn't be feeling the way you're feeling.
Right.
You shouldn't be having an experience.
So,
you should be giggling now.
Yes. Yes, well, and the limitation on the word enjoy, right? Because the way we use it is to be present. And being present implies an absence of suffering. And that that can be playful, or that can be going through a human experience like grief. But to have conditioning come and say, when you're experiencing grief, you should be experiencing something else. How can you enjoy life when you're going through that experience? That it's just so absurd.
Yeah. Well, it's such a bamboozle. That's a perfect use of that word, right? It's a complete bamboozle. It fools us utterly.
Yes.
As to what life is.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of obfuscates the fact that there are always layers in life, right? The complexity of how life is so beyond the grasp of conditioned mind that we can say that in the context of all that is, everything is perfect, and in that from that perspective, everything is a play. Is play. Nothing is real. All of those things are true at that level of disidentified perspective with all that is. But when I am identified with a human being, not ego, but a human being, I have a range of experiences in which that's not my experience. But the beauty is that I can move between that context and the experience Just because I'm grief-stricken doesn't mean that it negates all of the context that I have about life being perfect as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the glorious nature of our ability, our capacity to be able to move between those states all the time. I can talk to the mentor as the person who's grief-stricken, and I can access the wisdom, love, and compassion that can hold that grief.
Yeah.
Simultaneously.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. This too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's a whole new understanding of thy will be done.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And so that brings us to the end of the show and assignment today. There's always an implied message underlying what self-hate says. Like the raised eyebrow that is loaded with meaning, every self-hating voice is loaded with implications. What message about who or how you are is being implied by the self-hate messages? For example, the underlying message in you don't know how to have fun is all that happiness and joy stuff is just not who you are. RL, what you see. Reminder, never record any self-hating messages.
Mm. Mm. All right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Sherry. So happy.